discuss actually Pesach, the Seder night. So we have a few weeks until Pesach, the Seder night, is going to happen. So I was hoping we could discuss a little bit some of the elements of the Haggadah. There's a Gemara which we're going to look at, which deals with the central components of Maggid. And for me, this was always very, like, it still is very confusing, but now it's a little bit better. You start to read through Maggid, and you're sort of like, okay, we're talking about Egypt, and then there's lots of stories about rabbis, and then you're talking about in the daytime or in the nighttime, and there's other stories about rabbis, and there's some singing and whatever, and what, so how do you put a little bit of structure? What is it? What are you doing? What are we actually doing when we say the Haggadah? And part of it would require, a larger discussion about the mitzvah of Sipur Yetziyah Mitzrayim, about talking about leaving Mitzrayim. But I just want to deal with the structure quickly in the Haggadah. That's what's on the sheets, just Maggid. And then we'll go into the Gemara and start talking about the first component, which will be Manishtana. So basically, I think, in terms of the themes that we're going to see in the Gemara, the Maggid can be broken down into four components. The first component is Manishtana, which is the second paragraph here. The Halach Ma'anya is an interesting aberration, and there's all kinds of debate. The first thing we say as part of the Maggid is to pick up matzah, point the matzah, and say Halach Ma'anya. This is the bread of distress, of affliction, however, depending on which translation you use. And the question of what that's doing there is very interesting. Why do we say that here? Some people say we used to say it earlier. People would say it because why are you telling everyone that's hungry to come eat now? You're inside your house. So some people say people used to say it earlier in the market during the day. Halach Ma'anya, but people took advantage of it in bad ways, so they moved it into the Seder. But in any event, that's a little bit of a precursor, but then we talk about Manishtana. So that's basically component number one, which we're going to deal with hopefully today, at least in part, if not in full. The second component, as we'll see in the Gemara, is an idea of Avadim Hayinu, to be more precise, of Matchil Bignut Umasayim B'Shevach. The Gemara talks about this idea of starting the story of the Haggadah with the sort of less glorious parts, the embarrassing parts, and you conclude with the glorious parts, with the better parts of the story. One of those views is that there's a machlokas, as we'll see in the Gemara, about where you're supposed to start. One of those views is Avadim Hayinu. We were slaves to Pharaoh, Avadim Hayinu Lefaro B'Mitzrayim. So that's one view. So this is part of that second component. Then you have the story about Bnei Brak, and then you have the four sons, and then you have the four sons. And the Yachol Mirosh Chodesh section, and then afterwards, so that's sort of like, I don't want to call it filler, but it's like not part of the essential component of what we're doing in the Haggadah. There's all kinds of discussions to be had about how it relates and why. And then in the section which here is Maggid Yachol Mirosh Chodesh, I should have bolded another title here. There's Maggid Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah Hayu Avoteinu, which is a couple of lines down from there. That's the second view of Matchil Begnut Masayim B'Shevach. That's where you start. That you're not supposed to start talking about our slavery in Egypt, but you should start even before that in the historical idol worship that happened amongst Bnei Israel. Fine. And those two things, the Avadim Hayinu and the Mitchil Ovdei Avodah Zarah Hayu Avoteinu, more or less comprise the second component of Maggid, which is to talk about Matchil Begnut Masayim B'Shevach, start with the embarrassing part and finish with the less embarrassing part. And then you get to the third component, which we'll also see in our Mishnah today, which is which the Gemara discusses, which is the Drasha of Arami Oved Avi. There's a Parsha of Arami Oved Avi, which is the Parsha of the Mikra Bikurim, the person that, it's in Parsha Kitetze. Yeah, Mikra Bikurim, when you come to bring your Bikurim to the Kohen, you're supposed to recount the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim that's talked about there. And we darshan it afterwards. You first say it, and then the idea is to darshan it. The Haggadah goes through each phrase and explains what it means. It goes through each phrase and brings other psukim to explain what exactly it's talking about, and that is the brunt, basically, of the Maggid section. You have the questions, you have Matchil Begnut Masayim B'Shevach, darshaning Arami Oved Avi. Then there's a section about the Makos, which again is not really part of the fundamental components that are mentioned in the Gemara, but that's on the second page. You have the 10 Makos, that's where you talk about them, and you have the acrostic of Rabbi Yehuda, the Tzach Adash B'Achav, etc. And then there's the calculations, which are always, you know, very confusing to me. Calculation, exactly how many plagues did they experience, and whatever that's exactly that means. And then there's Dayenu, which is also not part of the fundamental components. And then at the end of the second page, you have the last component, which is mentioned in the Mishnah, which is Pesach Matzah Umar. That would be component number 4, if we were numbering these. So basically, I think, this is just in terms of understanding what's going on. When you say Magid in your Haggadah, we're accomplishing 4 components of the Magid. One of them is Manishtana, the asking of questions, which we're going to talk about today. One of them is the concept of Matchil B'Gnut Masayim B'Shevach. You start with the embarrassing parts, you end with the less embarrassing parts. One of them is the Drasha, the Parsha of Arami Oved Avi, and the subsequent explication. You go through it phrase by phrase and explain it. And one of them is what Rabban Gamliel says, the 3 things that have to be mentioned at the Seder, which is the last component of Pesach, Matzah, Umarah. You have to talk about those 3 symbols and what they symbolize as part of the central component here of the Seder. And then after this, you go on to eat stuff and so on. So that's more or less what we do. That's the core of the Haggadah. And as we'll see, the Mishnah will discuss these 4 components and the Gemara in combination. And so that's what I wanted to look at. I don't know how many times it's going to take us to look at all of it. Today we'll look at Manishtana, but to try and look at these, we get a sense of where is this coming from in terms of the halacha, and what kind of meaning, what kind of orientation, and how we can look at this so that we have good background for the Seder. I mean, it's useful for me, because I'd like to have some sort of idea in terms of the Seder, hopefully. And it's, you know, it's part of the Perek. I figured this is a good time to do that. So if we go flip into the Gemara now, this sugya starts on Kuf Tet Zayin Amud Aleph. That's where we're going to. Eventually we will find it. Right. The Gemara actually starts before this to start talking about the order of the Seder. The Mishnayot in this part of the Perek start talking about the order of the Seder. First you make Kiddush, and then the Gemara has this huge discussion about Kiddush, and when do you do it? We already sort of got into it. Has an even longer discussion about Kiddush, and then Havdalah, and other stuff which are sort of tangentially related. And then we get to, you know, Mazgulo Kos Risho, and what do you do? You have the Karpas, and you have a whole discussion there about Karpas, and making a bracha of Ha'adama now, and are you going to make another one later, and so on. There's a lot of technical discussions. And then we get into this part now, where it's Mazgulo Kos Sheni, they pour a second cup, and suddenly we start talking about the Manishtana. So that's what we're going to see now. And we'll look at the Mishnah. And part of the question that I want to deal with, as we'll see, is the text of the Manishtana, is that a formal requirement of the Seder? I must say it, otherwise I'm not going to be Yotze. Or is this something else? Is it some sort of other kind of requirement which doesn't require a formal text? That's sort of what we want to look at. So the Mishnah says here in Kuf Tet Zayin Amud Aleph, Mazgu lo kos sheni, v'kan haben shoel aviv, v'im ein dat ben aviv malamdo, ma nishtana halayla hazeh mikol halaylot, shebechol halaylot anu ochlim chametz u'matzah, halayla hazeh kulo matzah. Shebechol halaylot anu ochlim shar yorakot, Halayla hazeh maror, shebechol halaylot anu achlim basar tzali shaluk umavushal, halayla hazeh kulo tzali, shebechol halaylot anu tovlim, probably pa'am echat, halayla hazeh shtei pa'amim, ulefidato shel ben aviv melamdo. So that's the first chunk of the Mishnah. They pour the second cup of wine, and here, the way that the girsa that we have, the Khan, here the son asks his father. And in the event that the son does not have das, he doesn't have the ability to ask, he doesn't want to, he doesn't ask, then the father is supposed to teach him. And then it's not exactly clear how this is supposed to segue into the next section. Does it mean, and this immediately gets us into this question, is this a formal requirement or is it something else? Does when it says, you know, according to, if the son doesn't know what to do, then the father teaches him, and then it says manishtana, does that mean if the son doesn't know what to ask, then the father will use these questions to teach his son what to say? But if the son has some other questions, those will be fine also. Or does it mean the son's got to ask these questions? If he doesn't know how to do it, then the father first has to teach him how to ask these questions, and then he should ask them. That already gets into this question of, do you have to say dafka these questions, or could you say something else entirely? And we have the four questions that we ask, only three of which we actually ask now. In terms of chametz, usually we eat chametz and matzah. Today we just eat matzah. On all other nights we eat other vegetables. Today we only eat maror. We'll have to deal with exactly what that means. On all other nights we eat meat, which is roasted or boiled or cooked. And tonight we only eat roasted meat, which again is the one that we don't ask today. On other nights we dip, right, as far as we know now, we dip once. We're only required to dip once, or we only dip once, and tonight we dip twice. And according to the das of the ben, the son, the father has to teach him. Good. And then we have the other two of the other components already mentioned in this Mishnah that we talked about before in terms of the Haggadah. One is matchil begnut masayim b'shevach. That's what you're supposed to do. And then also v'doresh ma'arami oved avi ad shiigmar kol haparasha kula. And you start darshaning from inside the text of the Mikra Bikurim from where it says arami oved avi until you complete the entire parsha. That's as far as the Mishnah is concerned. So let's look at the Gemara. I think maybe we'll read the Gemara and then we can start talking a little bit about these elements of the Manishtana. Okay. So the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, Chacham v'no sho'alo, v'im eino chacham, ishto sho'alto, v'im lav, hu sho'al la'atzmo. V'afilu shnei talmidei chachamim sheyodin behilchot ha-pesach, fine. So the halacha is, if you have a chacham, I mean, we're assuming the son is a chacham. If the son is capable, then he asks his father. If he's not a chacham, then the son is not capable. Then a person's wife will ask them. Imlav, if he has nobody that's available to ask him, then he has to ask himself. Even two Talmidei Chachamim who know the halachas of Pesach ask each other, Manishtana halayla zemi kol halaylot. Even if everyone knows all the answers to these questions, somebody must ask Manishtana. That's the first statement in the Gemara. We'll come back to this again in terms of the larger question about formal versus not formal. Okay, so that's the first statement. You always have to ask these questions. The Gemara is assuming you always have to ask the questions in some format. The son has to ask, the wife has to ask, the two people that are talmid chachamim have to ask each other, or a person has to ask themselves.
Maybe we'll cover it.
Yeah.
I mean, in the Chumash, I mean, when it talks about the questions that the son will ask you,
yeah.
I mean, these aren't the questions, obviously.
Correct.
Where do chachamim come up with these specific questions?
That's an interesting question. Why is it specifically these things that are mentioned? I'm not 100% sure.
Like, where is it?
Like, I mean, I know that I've been trying to think about where they. I'm sure people write about this, so I should really just find out, and I will. But they all have to do with food. That's not really an answer. They do all have to do with the chiyuvim in terms of food that we eat. Possibly, as we'll see later, part of the goal, it's not exactly clear what the goal is here. It might be to sort of stimulate a person's thinking at a basic level, and maybe the most basic way to get a person to think about what's going on in front of them is to talk about what we're eating today that's different than what we normally eat. What we're doing as part of the meal that's different.
I'm going to ask you about the purpose, because they're very different purposes depending on who the asker is.
Mm-hmm.
The child asking a question has got a different role from the wife asking a question. got a different role from an ordinary man in the street asking question, and it's a different situation if two chachamim are sitting together and asking the question.
Right.
Each time the question is being asked by each party, there's a different type of question that's being asked.
So, right, and this leads to this question, the question that I was asking before, is this a formal text or not? In terms of answering what you're asking about, the Yerushalmi, I don't know if this is like jumping in, but I think it's okay. The Yerushalmi, in terms of jumping into this discussion, the other version of the Talmud that deals with this, has a totally different start. It quotes the Mishnah, and then it quotes the Braita that we say as part of the Seder about the four sons. There are four different kinds of sons. That's not mentioned in the Bavli at all. There's the Chacham, the Rasha, the Tam, and the She'eno Yodei Lishol. And the Yerushalmi says that our Mishnah is only talking about the Ben She'eno Yodei Lishol, the son who doesn't know, he doesn't have the ability to ask. So the Yerushalmi is making a statement, and I think it's exactly along those lines. The Chacham has a particular kind of question that he asks you, and you have to, this is like what we say, we have the text here somewhere, right? The four sons. The Chacham says, "Amai edut v'mishpatim asher tziva Hashem Elokeinu," what are the laws? And you have to answer him according to his question. You answer him by teaching him about the halachas of Pesach. The Rasha says, "Why are you doing this? What is this to you?" He excludes himself from the group. You have to answer him according to the way that he spoke up. It's a question also. The Tam just says, what is all this about? So you try and explain to him what the sort of philosophical basis or what the experiential basis is. And the one who doesn't know, you have this text. So in that case, you would be, meaning, if we're assuming that this is kind of a subjective thing, you have to react to the people that are at the Seder. It's an educational goal where you're trying to teach your kids about, you know, whatever relates to them, whatever about the story relates to them, then you're right. Then all of these different people will ask very different, are coming from different places, and their takes on these questions will be very different, and the Yerushalmi will say yes. And you don't even need the questions. People ask their own questions, and you're supposed to answer those. And if they don't, if they have no questions, then we have a fill-in that you can use. I think that this statement in our Gemara, that if you don't ask, then if the son doesn't ask, the wife has to ask. If the wife doesn't ask, then you ask yourself. Or two Talmid Chachamim ask each other, these questions is assuming, and we'll have to deal with it at the end why exactly, but is assuming that there's a formal text here. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, for one way or another, this is a formal text, you must say these questions. And it doesn't have to do necessarily with the. It doesn't necessarily emerge from the personality of the person or the background of the person that's asking. It's these questions inherently are central to the story of the Haggadah, or dealing with these kind of issues have to do, are somehow central to the whole idea of the Haggadah. They must be asked at every Seder, regardless of whatever else you're going to ask in addition. Yeah, sort of gets to the question.
I just can't identify these four personalities or groups of personalities with the four sons. That doesn't really fit.
No, they don't fit. And I think that's the point. The Bavli, in choosing to not quote the text from the Haggadah, is making a different statement, I think, about what these questions are. They're not questions which are meant to fill in for somebody's personality. They're questions which are inherent, somehow central to what the Haggadah is in every version of every Seder. Okay, that's an important point. That's the discussion of the that's that point in the Gemara. Okay, let's look at the next statement here. Shebechol halelot anu matbilin pa'am achat. So here the Gemara qualifies, right? Anu matbilin pa'am achat halayla zashtei pa'amim. Normally we only do one dipping. Matkif la Rava. Rava says, what do you mean? Atu kol yoma lo sagil lo matbil achat azimna. Meaning, is it true that every other day we have to dip once? We don't have to dip once. We never dip once. In a normal meal, you dip not at all. There's no requirement to dip. So what does it mean? On all other nights, we dip once. We don't dip at all. Fine. Ella amar Rava hachi ketane. Rather, Rava says, this is what it means. The Mishnah is meaning to tell you, shebechol halilot ein anu chayavin litbol afilu pa'amachat. Halayla hazeh shtei pa'amim. On all other nights, we are not even chayav to dip once. There's no chiyuv at all. This night, we have a double chiyuv. We have to dip twice. The karpas is dipped once, and the marer is dipped. And the Rambam dips everything into the Charoset, and I don't know exactly, various explanations are offered, and I can't remember them offhand. But the Rambam says the Karpas goes into the Charoset, and the Mar goes into the Charoset, and the Matzah goes into the Charoset, and just everything that you eat, except the Korban Pesach, that doesn't go in the Charoset, but everything else that you eat goes into the Charoset.
There's supposed to be some medical reason for
it. Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons for Charoset, potentially, is that it's there's either poison or worms or something inside of the maror, and you need to dip it inside and get rid of the... But that only applies to the maror. It doesn't apply to matzah. It's not clear why the Rambam is this. I mean, I don't think the Rambam accepts that that is the only reason for eating charoset. Okay, so Rava says, tonight we're chayv to dip twice, as opposed to other nights where we're not even chayv to dip once. And then... Matkif la Rav Safra. Rav Safra says, what do you mean? Chiyuv la dardike? The children who are asking these questions, they don't have any chiyuvim. They don't have to do anything. So why are children asking a question on all other nights? We're not chayv to dip even once. Tonight we're chayv to dip twice. That's a bad way of phrasing it. Alam Rav Safra, hachiktani. This is what it actually says. Ein anu matbilin afilu pa'am achat. Rather, what it means is on all other nights we don't dip. Our practice is not to dip even once. Tonight, we point out, we specifically dip twice. Okay.
Wasn't in the time of the Gemara they did usually dip when they ate?
I mean, they dip the bread. There's discussions about, yeah, maybe that's part of the question on this view.
Right.
They would dip bread into things.
Right.
Because the bread, they had different kinds of bread, right? That's part of the idea of having something lelefet bo'atapad, a relish or something to dip
right.
bread into, because the bread was coarse and had it didn't taste very good, unless you had fine bread, like fine floured bread. They would dip other things. Yeah, so you have to say that it means, you know, we don't make a big deal out of dipping, or something along those lines. Here, we're making a big deal out of dipping twice, even if you're going to say that we did dip occasionally. Okay, so that's the answer there. And we'll have to discuss, because this already sounds a little bit more like this is subjective. We're trying to explain this from inside the vantage point of the child. It's a problem. The whole question that Rav Safra has is, how can you say that we're going to make a text for a question which cannot be expressed from within the vantage point of the child, right? It has to be relevant to the child. Why? If it's a formal thing, if the Talmud Chacham is going to say it, if the guy's going to ask himself this question, what do I care if the child is asking the question can relate to it or not? Why does he have to be able to relate to it? So that we'll talk about. Also,
I'm going to raise the question last time that it hasn't actually happened at the time.
Right, and that's like one of the classic issues here is none of these things have happened yet. How does he know? He doesn't know about Maror. He hasn't seen that. He sees Maror on the table, maybe. He doesn't know about the Korban Pesach necessarily. He doesn't know about... None of these things have been done yet, so how does he know? Yeah. Okay, Matchil B'Gnut U'Masayim B'Shavach. He begins with the Gnut part. He finishes with the Shavach part. My B'Gnut, what does it mean? So here we have this debate about what exactly is the component of Gnut. What is that? Rav Amar Mitchila Ovdei Avodat Kilulim Hayu Avoteinu. They're talking about different psukim that you might have to quote. So Rav says you have to start with Mitchila Ovdei Avodat Kochavim Hayu Avoteinu, and that's one pasuk that we mention in the Haggadah. V'Shmuel Amar Avadim Hayinu. Shmuel says no, it's not talking about that. It's talking about Avadim Hayinu Lefaro B'Mitzrayim. We have to talk about being slaves to Paro. Amar Le, fine, that's the end of that discussion. And both of those things are included in our Haggadah. Amar Le Rav Nachman Ledaru Avde Avda Demapik Le Mare Lecherut V'Yahiv Le Kaspa V'Daba Mai Bai Lemeimar. So here we have another very confusing situation. Rav Nachman says to his servant Daru, a slave who is led out, whom the Mapik Le Mari Lecherut, whose master lets him free, the Yaiv Le Kaspa Vadaba, and who is given, his master gives him silver and gold, Mai Bai Le Meimarle. What should he say to him? Amarle, Bai Le Odoye Ulishvoche. He should praise and he should thank his master and praise his master who freed him and gave him all kinds of stuff. Amarle, Patartan Milomar Manishtana. Patach Vamar Avadim Beinu. So the response was, oh, then Rav Nachman says, oh, so you've patered us now from saying Manishtana. Now that you've responded that a slave who's freed by his master should praise him, we don't have to say Manishtana anymore. And then he started to say Avedim Hayinu. It's very confusing. If you're confused, that's good. I couldn't find a good... we'll see that I couldn't actually find a good answer to try and explain this, to fit this into any framework of anything. What exactly does that mean? And if you're trying to find in the Rashbam where he talks about this, Patar Tanmi Lomar, you won't find it, because he apparently did not have in his Gemara, which may be the best answer, as we'll see. Okay, so that's what we have here in terms of the text. There's a couple of other things we'll go through them in order here, in terms of trying to figure out, is this a formal requirement, is it a non-formal requirement? So in terms of what we've seen so far, we'll start, let's say, with the formal side. We'll have to go through a little bit of Rashbam and a little bit of Tosfot to deal with it. One element, you know, the Mishnah itself is not clear. You read the Mishnah, and the Mishnah says, Kan haben shoel aviv, vim ein dat beben, aviv melamdo manishtana data, etc. So as we said, it's not exactly clear what that means. Does that mean, you know, if the son doesn't know, then the father should teach him the text of manishtana? Or does that mean someone's got to ask these questions, the son's got to ask them, if the father doesn't know, if the son doesn't know, the father's got to teach him? But even when the son knows, it means he's asking manishtana. Not 100% clear. The story that we have in the Gemara, that a Talmud, if the son's not going to ask, then the wife should ask. If the wife doesn't ask, then he should ask. Two Talmidei Chachamim ask each other, really sounds like you have a formal text. There's some sort of formal text that must be recited at every single Seder, and you have no choice. That sounds pretty formal. Tosfot, carrying through in the Sugya, we'll look at that. I guess that's the order that I put this on here. But maybe we should look at the Rashbam first. Yeah, let's look at the Rashbam first. The Rashbam has a little bit of a, because it relates back to the Mishnah, the Rashbam has a little bit of a change in terms of the girsa, the way that he reads the Mishnah. And he has two possibilities. Either it's supposed to say, Mazgulo kos sheni v'chan haben shoel, which is the language that we have. He also includes a different reading, Mazgulo kos sheni v'chan haben shoel, without an aleph. And we'll see he interprets it differently depending on whether it's supposed to say v'chan or v'chen. So the Rashbam that I'm talking about is the first one on the Mishnah, towards the bottom of the thin lines in the Rashbam. And he says, v'chan haben shoel et aviv, kan b'mezigat kos sheni, haben shoel et aviv, im huchacham manishtana achshav shemozgin kos sheni kodem achila. So the first interpretation, the way that the Rashbam understands this, and this is points towards the non-formal camp, is why is the son asking these questions now? Why is this now? That's essentially what he's dealing with. Why didn't he ask this before now? Why didn't he ask it later from now? Why does the Mishnah say this is the point? And the reason is because in a normal meal, you know, the child has seen a normal Shabbos meal, a normal Yom Tov meal, you have pour a cup of wine, you make Kiddush. Even during the week, the Gemara says they used to drink wine in a formal meal. There would be wine at the beginning. We talk about at some point wine before the meal, wine after the meal, wine during the meal. So they would have wine before the meal. But you know, you have one cup of wine. Maybe you're even going to say Kiddush on the wine, and then you start eating. There's nothing else. The fact that we poured a cup, we did some stuff, and now we poured a second cup, and we're still not eating, we're about to pour the second cup, that's already stimulating the child, who's very perceptive. He's going to say, why are we doing this? Why are we pouring a second cup of wine before we start eating? And therefore, he's going to start asking all of these questions. And that really sounds like the Rashbam is saying, this is emerging out of the curiosity of the child. It's at this point in the Haggadah, not because it's a formal requirement, and first you pour the first cup, and then you pour the second cup, and then you have to say Manishtana, because this is the point in the story where the child's curiosity should be piqued. If he's paying attention, he should be saying, hey, what's going on? Now we're going to ask some questions. That's if you read it as V'kan haben shoel. The other possibility is the second thing that he quotes, V'rabbeinu kibel mirabo Rabbi Yaakov ben Yakar v'chen haben shoel. It's not supposed to say v'chan haben shoel, it's supposed to say, and so does the child ask. Or the child asks correctly, I don't know. Kmo kein bnot slafchad. Klomar dinhu sheyashoel b'meziga kosheni manishtana. So the other possibility is, I'm assuming Rabbeinu, in the, according to the Rishpam, is Rashi. Rashi received from his teacher, the Ri ben Yakar, that you take out the Aleph, and it's really supposed to say v'chen haben shoel. The son asks like this. This is how the son asks. Yeah, exactly. So he actually says, dinhu. It's a halacha, it's a din, that the son, at this point in the story of the talich of the Seder, the order of the Seder, this is where the son has to ask, manishtana halayla hazeh. So we see this question about the formal versus the subjective or reactive or whatever cropping up in the story in the Rashbam, depending on how you want to read the text of the Mishnah. If it's supposed to be v'chana ben shoel, that means he's reacting to his environment, perhaps. Alternatively, if it's supposed to say v'chen shoel, then the Ri ben Yakar understood. That's quite clear in the Rashbam that this is a din. It's a formal requirement to ask these things at this point. Okay, that's count two for the formal requirement camp. The third possibility, the third indication here, seems to emerge out of Tosfot, and Tosfot asks a question about the nature of the text of the questions. And Tosfot's overriding assumption, as we'll see, seems to be, it's not clear to me 100%, how he's going to deal with the Gemara, which assumes that we're not talking about Chiyuvim, but Tosfot seems to be assuming the questions are all revolving around the Chiyuvim, the actual requirements for what we're supposed to eat on the night of the Seder. Mm-hmm. Despite the fact that the Gemara says otherwise. we see this in a couple of the Tosfotim. The first one, the one where it's the most clear, is, I don't know if either one of them is more clear than the other, but let's say the case of Kulo Tzali. Mm-hmm. If you look at Tosfot Dibra Matkil Kulo Tzali, in that Tosfot, the question that he asks is, what do you mean Kulo Tzali? You have other meat, right? We talked about this a little bit last week. You're allowed to eat whatever you want at the mm-hmm. Seder night. The Korban Pesach has to be roasted, but you could have boiled chicken, you could have another boiled animal. There's no problem with eating that. So what exactly do we mean when we say on all other nights we eat meat which is roasted and boiled and mavushal and shaluk and whatever, and tonight it's all tzali? What does that mean? That's not true. You have to eat a korban pesach which is tzali, not everything else. So he says, Rav Chisda,
in time of the when you had korban pesach, they had other. Was there meat other than that?
I'm assuming you're allowed to have a meal. They had, as we'll see in a moment, a korban chagiga. Right. They would also bring another korban, which they would eat first, so that the korban pesach would be eaten al hasova. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming you're allowed to eat other food. I think so. As far as I know, you're allowed. The meal is still part of the story. Certainly not forbidden. I don't think.
Yeah.
Right. Even if the korban chagiga would still take up the core of your meal, just practically speaking, I think you're allowed to eat other food also. Mm-hmm.
Now, the question is, were you allowed to eat other meat? I'm not sure that you are allowed to eat meat outside the context of a korban.
Really? On a Seder, if you have the korban pesach?
Anytime.
You're allowed to eat shechted meat. You are allowed to eat chulin. There's such a concept as meat which is chulin. As far as I know, I think that you're allowed to eat it.
The world always assumed that.
I wonder if that's only because for some reason it's better to eat korban meat. Should I run and get the Rambam quickly? I don't have the Rambam in the back here. Yeah, maybe I will. We'll see. I'll be back in 1 second.
Who's Rabbi Rimon? Either Rabbi Yiman gave a shir on this on the Haggadah.
Oh, really?
I remember, I don't know, maybe 5 years ago.
Unfortunately, I wasn't there. Unfortunately,
yeah. Yeah, it's all color coded. To show like how it repeats itself four times and the pattern of. And each section started with questions.
Oh, really?
Because if you look, go through, you have the Manishtana, and then you have the four sons, which is questions, and the Rachamim or Shvadish, that's also a question. And it's the 19th, it's all broken up. Question, answer, question, answer.
The Rambam says, because the Rambam has a description of how you're supposed to do it when you have a Korban Pesach and also when you don't, covering all the bases. So he says, you know, bizman that you have these Korbanot, after you eat the maror, after you eat the matzah, you make a bracha on the Korban Chagiga, and you eat va'okal mibasar Chagiga, Chagigat arba'asar tchila first, and then afterwards you make a bracha on the Korban Pesach, and you eat the Korban Pesach. And then, in Halacha Ted, he says, V'achar kach, nimshach b'su'uda, you can eat a meal, v'ochel kol mashu hu rotze le'achol, v'shota kol mashu hu rotze le'shtot, you eat whatever you want to eat, and drink whatever you want to drink. U'b'acharona, ochel mi basar pesach, afil kezayit ve'enu tom acharav klum. At the end, you eat a kezayit of the Korban Pesach, and then you're done. Like the same way we treat the afikoman today. The question is, what does he mean by anything that you want to eat and anything that you want to drink? I don't know. It sounds like you can eat whatever
anything,
you want to eat and drink whatever you want to drink. I think. I'm not sure 100%, but that's what it sounds like. So if we're going, I mean, this is not the only place where Tosfot implies this, but we'll see it again.
Okay.
But if we're going to assume that's true, then back to the Tosfot. So what happened to kulo? What does it mean kulo tzali? There's other foods that you can eat also.
Right.
Rav Chisda says Rav Chisda moki la be'elu dvarim keben teima de amar. So rather, I mean, we'll read the Tosfot and we'll do the assessments. Rav Chisda says in elu dvarim, like ben teima, who said that the chagiga haba im hapesach eina ne'echelet elat tzali. The afal gav de ka'amar hatam va'amar of chizda bepirkin lete derech hagemara ken. Okay, that's a separate point. But the point that he makes here is that the korban chagiga, there's a machloket that's brought earlier in the Gemara, whether the korban chagiga also has to be tzali or not tzali. So the effectively what Tosfot says is, it says kulo tzali. What about the Korban Chagiga? The Korban Chagiga, that's a machloket. Some people say it has to be tzali, some people don't care about the tzali. So we must assume that this, if we're going to ask the question of kulo tzali, we're making the assumption that the Korban Chagiga has to be roasted. Fine, so that's what Tosfot said. Don't worry, all the korbanot that you eat that night have to be roasted. So my question is, and so really my question comes on top of this, what about all of the other meat? Assuming that reading the Rambam correctly and that Tosfot is making the same assumption, you can eat whatever you want at the meal. What about all the other meat? You know, that's not tzali. So the answer is, it looks like Tosfot doesn't care about the other meat. He cares about whatever meat I have on that night that's a chiyuv. My chiyuv is a korban chagiga, I bring a korban chagiga. I have a korban pesach, I bring a korban pesach. Both of those have to be tzali. That's enough for me to say, kulo tzali. All of it has to be... all of it is tzali, all of it is the roasted part. Similarly, in terms of the previous Tosfot, halayla hazeh... It doesn't make sense. Why?
No, because, again, looking from the perspective of a child.
Yeah.
The child would have participated in other meals where there are roasted meat and not roasted meat.
Right, so that's...
So,
yeah.
So why is Pesach different?
Child would participate in other meals where they roasted meat and did not.
Yeah, they had some roasted meat, some stewed meat.
Correct.
Okay, and Pesach the same thing. So why is Pesach?
So I think this is exactly the point. Tosfot is getting at is operating on the assumption that this is a formal. We'll see it explicitly. Also, this is a form. These are formal questions.
Mm-hmm.
This is a formal set of questions about the chiyuvim, the mitzvot of the night, and they don't necessarily have to reflect the child's experience of what's going on. the bone in the throat of this assumption is the Gemara seems to say the exact opposite of that.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure how to deal with that. But this seems to be what Tosfot's assuming. So that's exactly, you're right, that's exactly the point. It has nothing to do with the child's experience, because Tosfot is assuming this is a list of questions you must ask at the Seder, and it's really not about children at all. The son is asking, yeah, that's a nice byproduct, it happens to be. The son should ask, maybe he should notice these things. But if he doesn't notice them, you have to ask it this way anyhow. And the previous Tosfot, he also makes this kind of assumption, Halayla Hazem Maror, Ha delo amar kulo maror mishum d'achlinan shar yirakot b'tibul harishon. The reason why didn't we say here also kulo maror halayla ze kulo maror why does it say halayla ze maror not kulo maror, we only eat maror. So if you would ask me, I would say because you can eat a garden salad as part of your meal, eat whatever you want as part of your meal, you can certainly eat other vegetables. And Tosa says, no, it's not. That's not why. The reason why is because for karpas, you don't have to use mar. You can use whatever you want. You can use celery. You can use bananas. Right? This is the whole Elizabeth, New Jersey. They use bananas. Rabbi Teitz. You know the story? Rabbi Teitz, I've never been there, but at this I've heard that Rabbi Teitz Sr., the original founder of Elizabeth, New Jersey, he wanted people to know that bananas are ha'adama. So he would tell everybody to use bananas for karpas at the Seder. So everyone would know that bananas, you make a ha'adama. So apparently some people still do that. They use bananas. I mean, in Elizabeth, they really do it. In other places.
And salt water.
Yeah, I don't know how it goes with the salt water or the vinegar or whatever you're using for. Whatever. But they would use bananas. Okay, so, but the point that Tosfos is making is the same kind of point. Why doesn't it say halayla that we only use maror? Oh, because in terms of the first tibul, the first dipping, you can use whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
It's again, Tosfos is harping on the same point. It's about the chiyuv. It's about my requirements. What am I required to do tonight?
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, Tosfos could have just as easily said, why doesn't it say kulo maror? Because I can eat whatever vegetables I want to eat. But he doesn't say that.
But if you're right, it's a formulaic, a formula that has to be
recited.
Yeah.
It still doesn't make a whole lot of sense because of the same criticisms.
Right.
What was the point of in reciting this formula?
Yes. So that's a good question. Hopefully, I don't know if we'll get to it today, but we will get to it. That's a good point. At the end, you have to explain, what is this about if it is a formula? Yeah, 100%.
Well, we don't answer the question.
That's another problem.
Yeah.
We don't answer most of them. Someone wrote about that in our Seder Companion this year. Someone wrote about that component. It's coming soon, I think next week. We have the Seder Companion that we publish every year. So that's Tosfot there. And another place where we see this very explicitly in terms of Tosfot, if you flip back to Kuf Tet Vav Amud Bet. I have to flip back.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Kuf Tet Vav Amud Bet. There's another story about Manishtana. It's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 3, 6, 7, 8 lines up from the bottom if you're using the Vilna version of the Gemara. Abaye Havayativ Kameh de Rabba. See where that is? Abaye was sitting before Rabba.
There you go.
Yeah, you got it. Okay, Abaye v'yativ kamei de Rabba. He was sitting. So Abaye was a child. Abaye was, I believe, orphaned at a young age. Both Abaye and Rava with an aleph, and they were taken on as foster children by Rabba with a hay, which led some confusion. I mean, he wasn't called Rava when he was a child, but Abaye was sitting in front of Rabba at the Seder night, Chaza k'dikamadle tacha mikamei, and he saw that they were taking the table. They used to have little tables in front of each person. They're taking the table away from in front of Rabba. Amar lehu, so Abaye said, Adayin lo kachlinan, atuka ma'achre tacha mikaman. So he said, Abaye said, we haven't eaten yet, and they're taking away the tables from in front of us. What is going on? Amar le Rabba, so Rabba says, oh, petartan milomar manishtana. You have exempted us from saying manishtana. Because you don't have to say manishtana. As soon as the child is stimulated, the child asks a question, he wants to know what's going on, done, no more manishtana, the child's engaged, and now you can begin to say whatever is going to come afterwards. This is another one of the proofs that this is something that has to do with the child, something that has to do with the experience of the child. You see, the other story about Daru the slave and what's going on there is not clear. But this is crystal clear, right? He was sitting there. They took away the table. He said, "What's going on? Why are we? What happened? We didn't eat yet. Why are they taking the table away?" And Rebbe says, "Okay, now that you're engaged, that's the equivalent of saying manishtana, and we're done." So it's very clear that it's reflecting. What does Tosfot say here? Tosfot says, "Where is this? Lama okrin hashulchan." So first he starts to deal with. Right, no, it's actually the last Tosfot. The last Tosfot of Kadesh Yakiru Tinokot V'Yishalu. It's talking about, you know, the reason why we take away the table in the first place. Right. That was the preface to the story. Is so that the children will ask questions. Kadesh Yakiru Tinok V'Yishal, the last Tosfot on Kuf Tet Vav Amud Bet, Klomar, that is to say, Umitoch Kach Yavo Lishael B'Shar Dvarim. Because through this confusion, through the curiosity which is generated when he take away the table, he's going to ask other questions. Of a b'masha sha'al lama anu okrin ashulchan, but the question alone that he asked, why are we taking away the table? Lo yiftar mimanishtana. That itself is not going to potter you to get rid of the obligation of saying manishtana. What about Abaye? Abaye, it's crystal clear. The Gemara says, he said, why are you taking away the table? The Gemara says, oh, we're done. No more manishtana. No, I'll reread it. That's only the first thing he said. The first thing he said is, why are we taking away the table? But Tosfos said, but of course, after that he said, oh, I'm going to now ask the whole manishtana and the four questions and the whole formal thing. So you see here Tosfos again, crystal clear. You must ask these four questions. The whole notion that the child is engaged, that the child is interested, his interest is piqued, that's good, and that may be a separate thing that we're trying to accomplish at the Seder, but it's not going to deal with manishtana. And that seems to be very clearly Tosfos. Here you can't argue, I think, because it's clear. What do you think?
What was the point of the Gemara, right?
It's a story.
Teaching us that we don't have to say much.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's a story about this halacha that when the reason why they take away the table is so the children will ask, and Tosfos will say, oh, you see, it worked. Because one time they took away the table in front of Abaye, and he got confused and he asked, what's going on? That's something like that. So what we see emerging here is, I mean, because I don't know if we're going to get to the whole halacha.
It sounds like you're now
Yeah, because Tosfos assumes.
Yeah.
But you still have to say manishtana.
Look, you're forcing me to play devil's advocate, but.
By definition, means you are putter. You've now exempt from having this.
Right. Well, Tosfos.
And he's saying, no, you're not exempt. You still have to say manishtana.
No, he's assuming he said it. He's assuming he says that you said.
You're not putter from saying. Then you're not putter from saying. You said it already.
Right. What do you mean, patartan?
You're not using the lashon of patartan if you've already done it.
You're right.
Unless you want to say, well, because you've done it, you're not putter. Of course, you're putter once you've done it.
I wish I had something better way to defend Tosfos.
You know, it's like saying once I said my brother, I'm puttered from saying it. Obviously, right. I'm puttered from saying my brother once I said it. I said it. You know, they like it.
Yeah. So I can't. You're right. Tosfos is clearly reading into the Gemara. He's forcing some stuff on the Gemara. I can only answer maybe why is he doing this, and this maybe will set up this question. We'll come back to it next week. But this is the idea here. We've seen several indications in the Gemara that this is a formal requirement.
Right.
The strongest one of them being the first statement in our sugya that we saw today, that if the son asks, then great. If the son doesn't ask, your wife has to ask you. If the wife doesn't ask, you have to ask yourself. Right, and if two Talmidei Chacham have to ask each other, what do you ask? Manishtana dot dot dot. So the cleanest way, the clearest way of reading that statement, it's absurd, right? If the goal is to ask a question because I don't know the answer, and then stimulate curiosity and then answer the question, why should I have to ask myself? Like, I'm going to answer it. What does that even mean? It's not clear what that means. So the cleanest way to read that is you have a formal obligation, you must ask these questions, period. These questions are part of the text of the Seder, especially if you read it like the Ri ben Yakar, V'chen ha-ben Shoel, the son has to ask these questions, then the Gemara says, and don't think it's just the son, if there's no son, these questions need to be asked. So if you're going to use that as your peg, in terms of answering the question that we're dealing with, that clearly seems to indicate you need to ask these questions at the Seder no matter what. By hook or by crook, you have to ask them. In terms of analyzing the language of the questions, Tosfot also comes out. I mean, you could have looked at them one way or another. But I think that is the strongest source to say this is a formal thing, you've got to do it. And then Tosfot has to deal with all the other indications that push in the other direction. Right? The assumption that this is the child's, that we're talking about the child, we can't be talking about chiyuvim, because children don't have chiyuvim. The second statement that we have in our sugya. This story that Abaye, with his one question, which was not at face value one of the four questions, got rid of the chiyuv of manishtana, those and the Yerushalmi, which is in the rafters, which nobody mentioned.
That's not strictly logical.
Why?
Because it doesn't have to be a chiyuv on the child. It's a chiyuv on the adults that the child should ask.
Yeah.
No, what we're saying, what we said was,
so once a child is asked the question, then the rest of the adult group don't have to ask that question.
Right, no, but what we're saying, the Gemara's analysis was, you can't phrase the question in a way that talks about chiyuvim, requirements.
Yeah, you can.
But that, okay. I mean, we sort of seems to assume that you do. But at least the Gemara says you can't phrase the question that way, because the question has to be phrased in a way that the child can relate to it. There's no, the children don't have any chiyuvim. They're not asking about chiyuvim. They're asking about what they see around them, and that's how the question has to be phrased. Yeah.
I'm puzzled by the Gemara, because the Gemara is assuming that we are assuming that the chiyuv is on a child to ask. It's not. The chiyuv is on us to ensure that the child asks.
Right, okay.
So it's our obligation, it's not the child's obligation. Obviously the child doesn't have an obligation.
Right, but the child, I mean, okay, that's fair point. I mean, and the child, we could make the child ask about anything, I guess. Teach him to ask, you know,
right,
about
and,
a
concern.
You could teach him to ask about whatever.
That.
Things that he doesn't understand or doesn't know, that's true. But the okay, that's a fair point. I mean, and the indication in the Gemara still seems to be that the format of the question ought to be one which, you know, the child can relate to in terms of his own level of chiyuv. You can't be talking about the chiyuv of dipping, because the child doesn't have a chiyuv to dip. He doesn't dip. He just sees what's going on around him. And the question should be formulated in terms... Does that necessarily prove that it's not a formulaic thing? Maybe not. Maybe this story of Abaye is a much stronger indication. It could be right. The story of Abaye seems to be a clear indication that as soon as the child's curiosity is piqued, you no longer need manishtana. That seems to be clear. And the Yerushalmi, which nobody mentions here but is hiding in the rafters, also seems to assume that. The text of manishtana, the Yerushalmi says explicitly, is only for the ben she'eino yodea lishol, only for the child that has no questions. But if there's another child who asks any questions at all, the Ben HaChacham, the Rasha, the Tam, they have to be answered based on their own questions, and there's no requirement to ask manishtana afterwards. So this is the tension which emerges here in terms of understanding manishtana. Is this formal? Is it not formal? So next time what we'll look at is how this sort of emerges in terms of the halacha, and to try and explain both sides. We'll see, there is, I think, a machlokas rishonim. The machlokas rishonim sort of gets interestingly removed from the story of the halacha because of the way that the Ramah reads one of those Rishonim, but I could be, it's just in my head, but I don't think it is. And so we'll look at that next time and try and explain a little bit just in terms of the philosophy, the meaning. Like, what does it mean if it's a subjective thing that has to do with the child? What does it mean if it's a formal text that I have to recite? We could look at the
next. Can I make a suggestion?
Yes.
Children are forced